number of men of our company under Michael Burke got to work making the brass heads and springs for the grenades. And about once a fortnight, all of those will be conveyed to the NACRA headquarters. Tom Leanne had a horse that used to be doing road work and a sidecar, and Tom Leanne and they used to bring out the brass heads and the springs in the, I thought you called it the
well.
Huh?
The well.
In the well of the car. Out to us. One day, they started off with their load. One Sunday morning, they started off with their load. And Tom Leanne, and of course, I needn't tell you how hard working on the road is. If you want a good first route for to make him trot, no mind anymore. But they came out anyway, out to Mill Valley Bridge, and they turned off there, the foot of road, about 100 yards of the foot of road, only traversed about 100 yards of the foot of road. And they ran right into two lorries of Camerons coming in for cove against them. Duggan immediately jumped off the car, pulled off his coat and threw it over the horse's head. And here he was, and he holding the horse and having, "Ho boy, ho boy, ho boy." And the first lorry stopped, and who got out of it? But Captain Morrison, the intelligence officer for the battalion. And Duggan, in a usual clever way, had made his acquaintance. And he knew him. He knew Duggan. He moved him. A young horse Duggan, he said, when he saw Duggan having his coat over the horse's head, first time under the sidecar, sir. First time under the sidecar, sir. Duggan. And then Duggan at the time was treating the captain's dog for a touch of the mange. And how is the little dog, sir? "We're getting better, Duggan. Getting better, Duggan. Getting better, Duggan. Stop those engines." And the Cameron engines, the engines of the two lorries were immediately stopped. Whilst Duggan led his hooded horse and his sidecar and his load of grenade tops past the two lorries and off on the road for Knockraha. Ned Fitz came home on his Christmas holidays to Nagraha and immediately reported to me for duty. He having already three brothers of his, Pat, Martin, and Ned, in the volunteers felt shy of the fourth. And I set him up over to the factory, which was going in Blossom Grove at the time, and have a look around there and see if you can find anything to do there. He went over. He came back to me the following day. Martin, he said, are you in a hurry with those grenades? Okay, I'm still in an awful hurry with them. You're not going to get them out of that factory, you see. The best they'll be able to do out of that, he said, is about 20 grenades a day. For it's wrongly constructed. At the time, the brigade had supplied me with a 4-horsepower engine and a fan for getting a proper blast in the furnace. And I was very disappointed at this. Ned went off. But then they do only go over to Nagraha and consult the Nagraha boys. And then he came back to me, Martin, he said, will you give me your house? My house at the time consisted of a dugout under Dinny Lynch's first break. And there was 3 or 4 bunks in it. No matter, Martin, he said, we'll make one for you. As they did. And I said, you can have it. So I had to work on it. He constructed his own furnace. And after trying with 2 of the ordinary country fire machines, he couldn't get blast enough out of the 2 fire machines for to melt the metal. So he went off and he got 2 machine for cutting cabbage with a big wheel in them, and he extended the axle on the wheel of the fire machine and put a big timber pulley in the end of it and had a belt on the timber pulley and around the big wheel of the cabbage machine. And when he put the 2 of them going, he got blast enough for to run the metal, any amount of it. And he proceeded on that. The result was that a purely local team of lads they were turning out 45 grenades a night. Whilst the brigade one, as we used to call the one in Blossom Grove, was only able to do the greatest number they were able to reach was 25. And it took them only a couple of months when they had another dugout ready for me.
You said that, huh? We could have recorded them. We last time. Look, start off again. I went out like that. Right.
Late John Hogan of Kilquine. When he'd be turning out his cattle every morning, he turned them through the ray, as he used to call it. And there was a corner over in the ray where there was five or six humps where unwanted persons had been buried. And he walking along the path, one day there was a crucifix on the path right in front of him. And he picked up the crucifix and he looked over at where the homes were and he kissed the crucifix. And he came back. So, but when he coming back, he put back the crucifix where it was in the path. No, we got. He moved the crucifix over and he put it on the home. And when down with his cattle, and he coming back, lo and behold, the crucifix was again on the path in front of him. And he picked it up and he said a prayer over it. And then he gave a look over at the homes. And he said, there's some whores, ghosts buried there. And the cross of Christ wouldn't rest easy in his grave. And he took the crucifix away with him. I think that's the whole of it. Is they were above tinning the turnip. They saw what happened with Johnny and the crucifix. And so they took the crucifix off the hump and put it back again in the pad. But up to the day of his death, Johnny firmly believed that miracle had been performed. And the umbrella going on.
It's definitely
I know. At Mr. Cashman's in Laffy Lord, there's an old fort there, and in the mouth of the fort there was a couple of loads of stones in a hole in the fort. So curiosity killed the cat. We gathered all the stones out of it and we found ourselves faced with a wall, two walls of a passage. We went into that, we passed along it, we came to a small square hole, hard to get through it, and we went into that. We got into a round room. The stones, the flags were laid partly in all round the room. Another line of flags on top of them going in still further, and then a coping stone down on the lot. And there was a passage leading from that down to the river. When we flags were covering in that and the passage of two stone walls, gray stone walls, in between them. But Thomas started maneuvering with the stones, and one of the flags slipped, and it came down here across Thomas' chest, and he had the wall under him. And he couldn't move up or down, either or over, and we had a terrible job to remove the flag. It took us a couple of hours before we got means of removing the flag, so I had to get Tama out from it. We got in then into a very small hole then, and we got into a little a circular room, built in a circle of dry stone, and then the man on which that was roofed was there was stone, about half the stone would be in the wall and the other half within, all round. The next one, you had half the stone in again, all round, and then there was a coping stone down top of the lot. So we travelled on through that and we came to a straight passage down and took us down to the river underneath and came out below between two big rocks in the river. But you know the drop we got in it. And we didn't know it till after the truth. If you get your map, and have a look at the map, you'll find the fucking fort and the fucking hole in the map. We were looking at it as a place that you could make a dugout and have a dugout, don't you see? That'd be a dead safe one. Because there was nothing safe in it, in the other lane. We came after it and got out on the survey map, and there was the second fort and the hole and the passage. left and sleep in Hogan's loft, and Johnny Hogan's loft. But there were three or four getaways out of it. One into the stall, another into the stable, another out the back way, down in a heap of mangles and out into the haggard. Besides the other door out of the loft. So, Dahi and I used to be always armed. And there is some no arms. Neither Canavan nor Seamus. She never saw a gun on Seamus. But this night anyway, I was in bed there and I couldn't sleep. I got out and free. And I got up in the finish. I got out. I sat there. It was a very bright moonlight night, about 2 o'clock in the morning. I sat there, looking up the road up toward Nakraha. And all of a sudden I saw this fellow come out of Denise's house above. You know what that is now? There were a lot of them houses there that were long to Manny's and they were all idle. At the time we were talking about. And all of a sudden I saw this fellow come out. Came down the road and turned off at the bridge off of Ballingoig. So I went in there, cut Dahi, he was Adam, he was the only fellow who carried his kit in him, besides myself. And I walk him, how quick is he? Dahi came out and he went, we got down cross country. We had Ballingoig Bridge. So I came down the road and we hopped him there. Big, able man, he's about 6 feet. He looks like a tramp. And a grey shirt, grey soldier shirt on him. Or raggedy clothes. The only thing peculiar about him was that there was a pair of rubber shoes he had on him. So he was like, for the pocket of the jail, I shoved his kid into him and said, come on, get up your paws. He didn't speak a word, but he put up his hands. I started questioning him, then they get no answer whatever out of him. I even brought out questions and gave him too many. Well, the handy, no answers. I got him in all the reach anyway, in there, into an old quarry of Murphy's there. And we questioned him there again, and then we searched him. After court, and removed the old grey soldier shirt, and he had a complete suit of silk underwear under us. And a pocket up here, and a bloody fine watch in the pocket. So he had long 45 wibbly and 16 rounds of stuff in the pocket. So I did everything. I wrote out the questions for him and everything and handed him a pencil. Shook the head, shook the head, shook the head. Very well, says, that's the way with you. You have 10 minutes, say, dear. Make your peace with God the best you can, boy. The only thing he did, even the lowest, put the wave after the bandage around the eyes. But he stood up and took it. We shot him down, lift him down the quarry. the British Army officer. The watchman screamed. And during the truce, I took the watch into Morrison and gave it to him. And there'd be a lot of those fellows volunteer, British Army after you to volunteer that time. And they'd be dropped on the road. The fellow be dropped above Pigeon Hill now. And he'd do one road. And any house that looked like fellows would be staying, go and search it. Then a fellow be dropped on another road and do the same thing. And they'd cover 3 or 4 or 5 roads before they'd meet together over in Butlerstone after. That's why he made off he was anyway. What's going on? They'll throw with him, only shoot him.
Right,
it's always. Mike Canavan had an old dog, Fiona, he's calling, an old white haired terrier. That he was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, it wasn't he going across there? One little fireman.
Well, how many of you were there?
God, there was a bloody big winter, 5 or 6 of us. Mm-hmm. And the old dog was talking to him from the salon. He just arrived at the gate going into the old farmyard. He turned around all of a sudden and rushed back and tried to crawl in between Mike's 2 legs. And I pushed on and went in the gate and he went. He saw the thing come out right through the back door of the loft. And the back door of the loft was closed and padlocked. I think it was like about the size of a calf, a young sucking calf, you know. Black, like a black dog. Came out and stood on the top step. He made a grab for the pocket for the skid. And dying caught me by the hand, I went on fire, Tom Martin, he's on fire. He hopped down in front of us in the passage and hopped from that over on top of a gate about 50 yards away. And disappeared after that. Well, I wasn't afraid. But I went in through the bloody, the usual, we went in through the old co-house below, and up the trap hole, and gathered the blankets above, and came out. And gave him that blankets outside in the road, outside in the passage. But I could never make off what it was. I told Peggy's mother about it here after I got it for salt. And she said the place had a nearly name. And told she'd say about it.
The man in that the men went with the milk and the churns. As I thought, the churn fell out. Well, in the meantime, those two gentlemen came to the door and I met them and they asked, was he in? And I said, no. So they looked for the names behind the door and his name wasn't there at all. So they went out again and the men came in then and said he was after coming from the northern side and that they were after firing on him. Mm. but that he got away and he dropped his coat and hat. So the next thing is they all came around then, 8 or 9 of them, and they put the coat and hat up in the gate outside, and they took me out and they asked me, did I know who owned them? And I said, no. And they said, whoever he was, he had a lot of candles in his pocket. Every time I go, he'd take a candle. So, they said he ran from the back of the house, which he didn't, you know. He didn't run from the back of the house at all. He was only coming in. So the next thing I heard then is that he was over in Fitzgerald's and got away from them. They fired at him, but they didn't get him. And they came in here to me then and they said, we had no right to bring those things. They are useless to us. If we had our rifle, we had him. But with those things, they don't carry a far enough and they're no use to us. Mm-hmm. They were disgusted with him. So.
They came on him. In my village, there is a commune. And up the bargain. And it was in the bar, even I saw there, 5 of them came out of the little row of this back there. 5 of them came out of the row, and 5 of them, and the 5 of them were in cities.
They haven't cut only. They called him to wait, don't you see? And they finished him. He ran from there to wait.
What?
They called him to wait.
No. They didn't call much at all. And he was walking along the board, coming into the yard, you know. And they came out of the top of the grove and cut down across, making for the gate after me. So, then I waited at first. There might be a couple of the lads from Cove on the run, you know, because it's here they come out with first and then take their directions from here. But I turned off him. I closed the gate again. The gate came into the yard. I closed that and walked back again along the boreen. They changed their course and they cut down towards me. And then they shouted, halt, no boy. He want him. And they had the skits out all right, but they didn't fire. For they made a drive for the ditch.
They fired when you were crossing the field.
Hmm?
When you were after crossing up the field here.
Oh, yeah.
They fired in at you.
Oh, they gone then.
They
were late for supper.
They couldn't pass there. All hole of muck, you know.
They threw it as a bar where the cross below. And when I got out in the boreen, then there was a... It's the way to the kitchen, the big old lock there, you know, of sewage.
Saturday night, and he was here Easter Saturday, and he went away. He went away about 6 o'clock, and that night we had a raid. I always thought there was someone telling, because as sure as he come home, which he very seldom did, we'd have a raid immediately after.
Huh?
We always had a raid as soon as you came home. After you went away, we had a raid. Easter Sunday night, we had a raid. I was in bed and I heard the walking. And when I woke, I thought it was morning, you know, that they were coming to milk the cows. It was dark. And when I looked at the time, it was only 1 o'clock. And the next thing, there was a knock at the door and I came to. And at that time, we had only candles, you know.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I brought down the candle. And when I opened the door, they said, put out that light or we'll shoot it out. Get back to bed. Make no unusual noises. Carry on the same as if we weren't here at all. So I went back to bed. And I was sleeping in the inn room that time. And the girl I had was sleeping in the bed behind me, don't you see? We were in the room, the same room with me. And they came upstairs and they came into the room. And they looked into her bed and they said, this girl is here. And they came back and they looked in over me and they said, this girl is here. And they were all in the morning, then in and out of the room and down and all. So in the morning had to get up to milk the cows. And she said to me, will you be afraid to stay there? And I said, I won't be afraid at all. I'll get up in the minute, but I'll stay here for a while. So I stayed there and anyhow, she went out. After a while I got up, I came down. And they were here in this room. And they had the dog, whole sheepdog with them. and they were having whiskey and milk. They were after going out for milk, and they had brought whiskey with them, and they were having whiskey with them.
Very nice.
And they remained then for a while, and they were after inspecting the cows and everything. They were opening the stall with them, and they looked at the cows. And one of them said his father had so many cows and all this sort of thing. And they went away, and they said nobody leave the house before 9 o'clock. But of course they would be gone when they'd be old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a bit of goodness, we had hundreds of rage and never found them very, very bad. They were never bad to me. I had a raid one night and they was now in the house myself. And I was upstairs. I was after being sick. And I said to Molly, and she went out to me, let the door open, you'd never tell what I'd have a raid. So she left. She didn't let the door open. She pulled it out, and I had a fire upstairs. I was sitting at the fire when the knocking came to the door, and knocking, and I came down, and they were there. They didn't push in the door; all that wasn't closed. So they came in anyhow, and I went up again, and I sat down upstairs, and the officer came in, and he said, "Are you afraid?" I said, "I'm not. I'm not anywhere afraid." "She ought to know us well enough," he said. And he said, "No searching, no searching, we'll go away." They were awfully nice to me on all the caverns, but the bloody stairs were awful.
Awful fool.
No, they were nice to me.
No, to that past thing on you now. We should dug in with like a brother of his.
You might, that's quite correct.
The only day they were nice to the Kilkline Bridge. That at all, there was a post office and the rising at the fighting at the post office and all those person, all those pictures around, you know. They were pulling them down. And then just like what a whole son would have. I said, just like what a whole son would have. Oh, they were afraid.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the only day they were kind of vexed. But indeed, I put up with Martin the stairs.
And their murder gang, if you like, than we had here.
And sure, we were here, and we were having raids. And did we ever know that? When they weren't going back quick, they were ringing to keep Hamish below. There was not anything after happening. When Martin came home from jail, his cook came up to see him, Mrs. Kiddy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And she came up to see him, and she said, they always rung up us when they, if the men were out too long.
No,
there was anything after happening. We never knew that, you know.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
She had the 3 kids below in Cove.
The 3 carried 2
fellas. She had the 3 men over Pantarebo Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Ryan.
Barry.
And Barry was shot the same morning, yeah. That's correct.
I belong in Cove and then I rambled into Burkey. In the meek here and in the hut, in the barrack. Mm. But that Martin, he said they'll be soon going. Christ, are you going to let him go? Are you going to let McIntosh go with him? You know what it is, Martin said he had none of us know him. Yeah, so they took a coat and a hat above off of me one day. And if you will come with me now, say I'll go up looking for the coat and hat off of them. Truces on, you know. I'll go up looking for the coat and hat off of them, saying, we'll have a look around and see if we get in touch with the book or anywhere. So Burkey came up with me. So we went in above. And Jesus is Burkey. They were after raiding two wagons that was over in the station of stuff that came in.
Burkey.
Burkey and company were after raiding the two wagons anyway. And they're lovely white white shoes. And bucket pair of them, and I'm going up to the barrier. Going up, putting me up the road. Then we end up in, I inquire for Captain Morrison. You're the only fellow we knew there. Now we had the two best lines of intelligence that every fellow had. Sergeant Byrne of the RIC, below in the barracks, Burkey at him. Body and bones. And I had Johnny Grandin. Johnny was above in the canteen at the time with him. So we raided it. Went up to the huts and he went. I inquired for Captain Morrison. Hi, Jock. Blow care looking for Captain Morrison. Jock went in apparently and found Morrison here. Morrison came out and he was half lame. And down they told him, why the Martin Carrie say, this is Captain Burke. So, oh yes, he says. They have a problem in you, so they gave me for a court natural belong to me. How is it? That's the day Sandy fired and Sandy wouldn't need a bally Eric. That's the way he said it. The Sandy fired. And Sandy wouldn't need a bally Eric. And he said, the lads wore him, he says, tell you the truth, the lads wore him, go out and raids and things. They went that way. I give you the best bloody coat and hat you can buy for money in Cork, he says. So give me back the rifles you got off, my fella. Or we were down for the whole lot, that's him. We had 38 rifles, belonged to the Camerons, to hear the truth. Between the hopping and the jumping, no, that's where we had 38 rifles belonging to the Camerons. So, he was very disappointed in there when he couldn't give me any a quarter hat. Anyway, he says, come over and see the Colonel. Colonel will be delighted to meet you now, and all is over. And we went over to see the Colonel. We were McIntosh I'd be looking for.
I know.
I went over and we had a look around. Knocked at the door. Out comes an orderly. Colonel Cameron in. Yes. I want to see him a moment, please. The lad. Out comes the old Colonel Cameron and he went, I want to introduce you to Curry. I know you'll be glad to meet Curry. And you have one bitter look at me. And a lot more welcome for Curry. He ran about 6 months ago. And he banged the door, no faces. So, poor Morrison was a gentleman. They had a big farm in Scotland. We were talking about the cows here. But,
yeah.
So, come on down, have a tiddly, says he. Come down to the canteen, have a drink with us. So, Burke and I went down to the canteen with him, and I went down long ago, of course, we're looking, every day, the two of us were watching for the buck. And all of a sudden, this big, huge, whale of a man stood among the old hut stores. Who he says, Sergeant Major? Sergeant Major came over and he went, I want to introduce you to Martin Curry, he says. And the Captain Burke. Sergeant Major Det är det jag inte får gå ner med.